Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Number one New York Times bestselling author Elizabeth George and Thomas Linley, the protagonist in her Linley mystery series, have a long history together. The publication of the new novel, Something to Hide, marks the 21st novel in the series and makes George one of the most acclaimed mystery writers of the last few decades. In the new mystery, acting detective superintendent Thomas Linley and team investigate the murder of one of their own, who was working on a special task force in North London's Nigerian community. Elizabeth George is the New York Times bestselling author of 21 psychological suspense novels, 4 young adult novels, 2 books of nonfiction, and 2 short story collections. Again, the new novel is Something to Hide, and it is a great treat to welcome Elizabeth George to this week's book show. Thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for inviting me and for orchestrating the connection between Seattle and the East Coast.
That connection of one coast to the other is interesting because it seems like now is just as good a time as any to look at the success of this series of someone who is based on the West Coast in Seattle and is writing a British mystery series. Were you ever daunted by that task? Now 21 books in, it looks like a great idea. But were you ever in the beginning thinking, oh, all right, well, we'll see how this goes?
You know, it never occurred to me to be daunted by the task because I was writing initially for really my own entertainment and to prove to myself that I could indeed write a crime novel from beginning to end. So when I made the decision to try crime novels, I immediately chose England because I liked British crime novels, and I especially liked being able to write about England. So I just sort of set off merrily on my way, felt that I would, you know, I would give it a go and see how it worked out for me.
In this particular novel, it starts off what seems like a simple murder. And as you make the case, there is nothing really simple in these situations. So give us a sense of ultimately the story that you wanted to tell in this particular outing.
First, the murder of the police detective sergeant, Teo Bontempi, doesn't at first appear to be a murder, because she is found in her bed unconscious and is taken to the hospital when the policeman who comes to do a wellness check on her isn't able to rouse her. And she, in the hospital, it's discovered that she has a subdermal hematoma. And that's the kind of injury that she herself wouldn't necessarily know that she had. It's the kind of injury that killed the actress Natasha Richardson. She is very quickly, as a result of the hematoma, put on life support. And when she dies, then an autopsy reveals that a blow had fractured her skull. That is then the murder that is being investigated by the police. But the book takes on a much larger issue than the murder of a policeman, because it also is investigating crime, a particular kind of crime that is committed against women, really in many nations in the world, and that is the crime of female genital mutilation. So she belonged to a task force that was investigating and putting an end to all kinds of abuse of women, and that is one of the many abuses of women that they have been looking at.
It's really at the heart of the story, and this is a practice that is in about, 30 countries. So this book taking place in the Nigerian community in London, people who immigrate bring that practice along with them.
Yes, that is what happens. And I would say that, you know, not every tribe in Nigeria follows this practice. The particular tribe that the Nigerian family in question is a member of, they do have this practice. And what has happened in Great Britain is that the practice has gone obviously underground because it is illegal. In early days, the British police tried to put an end to it by using the border controls that they had at the airport, because generally people would be allegedly going home to visit family in Nigeria. And then they would come back, and they would come back with a child who had had this performed on her. And what they attempted to do is recognize that anybody who was traveling out of the country to Nigeria with a young girl needed to be questioned very seriously. And anybody who came back into the country with a young girl who now was very adult looking in her manner of dress would have to be detained. So that was where they began, but then they were not able to stop it that way. So now they're going for a larger approach to it.
Speaking of approach, I assume that issue was first in your mind, and the Nigerian community in the north of London and writing about that came as a result.
Yes, that's right. I had known for a while that I wanted to write a book that had feminine genital mutilation as its foundation, because what I like to do with my novels is to explore larger issues than just the crime and the investigation and the solution to the crime. I wanted to look at other things besides that. So I have, in previous novels, have looked at the Anglo-Pakistani community and arranged marriages and what kind of impact that has on individuals. And I have also looked at the Black community living in public housing in another book. And so what I try to do is, take a look at what's going on in England today. So I think that's one of the things that makes my books a little bit different, is that they are also connected to larger social issues.
Elizabeth George is our guest on this week's book show. The title of the new novel, a Linley novel, Something to Hide. I think you'll agree with me and not take this as any sort of criticism, but the plot is very complicated. And I'm curious as to how you get that right, the pacing of it and what happens and how it unfolds. Because also another observation is, and I say this as a compliment, this is a doorstop of a book.
It is long, but I'm in the book's defense and in my publisher's defense. One of the reasons it's so long is that they have used a very, very readable size of type, and they have also done a good job of spacing it so that it's very easy for the eye to read. They could have chosen a smaller type and a thinner kind of paper, and the book would have been well disguised. That's what happened with another book I wrote called Playing for the Ashes. It was probably would have been equally long, but the publisher just presented it differently to the public so they wouldn't freak out. So yeah, it is a doorstop of a book. Longtime readers of my books have actually never complained about the length of the book. They tend to fly right through it. I saw on Twitter, I think it was, where somebody had bought the book and read it in 3 days. You know, so I think what happens in my novels is that the interest in the characters causes the reader to go much more quickly through the book, because they are very much attached not only to the continuing characters, but they become involved in the characters who are part of the subplot. What I do with my subplots, I create them with unity of theme. In other words, in this book, the theme is that is women owning the power that they were actually born with. And so the subplots, no matter what is going on in the subplot, the theme is reflected in that. So when you take the subplot involving Linley and his lover, Deirdre Trehearne, that's what's reflected in that subplot. In the marriage of Simon St. James and Deborah St. James, that's what's reflected in the subplot. It just doesn't visually look the same as the subplot with Monifa in the Nigerian community, who needs to, you know, own her power. So that's what I try to do with all my books. If a subplot isn't unified with the main plot, basically it just goes clunk, and I can see that myself when I'm writing it. So that sometimes means, okay, that subplot can't be featured in the book. And I know what the individual subplots are because I create the characters in advance. So I know what their story is. And the question then becomes, do I want to feature the story of this particular group of characters or this particular character? Do I want to feature that individual story in the book or just make this character part of the larger crime that's being investigated? I hope that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. You know, I think the last time you were on our program, we were talking about Mastering the Process, which was From Idea to Novel. And we talked about your process. And of course, you were a teacher of writing. But there is a complicated chronology here, and you touched on it, but at how many times are you taking a bat to the pinata and trying to get it to the point where it opens up and bears the fruit or the candy, however you look at the tortured metaphor that I used?
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. Well, this book, the chronology was everything, because the investigation into the crime doesn't start for, I don't know, maybe 100 pages. So everything that leads up to that 100 pages is essential to the understanding of, on the part of the reader, of what's going on in the novel. But there can't be anything in the first 100 pages that constitutes something that Linley is going to discover once he starts the investigation. I call it the plot, the wave, and the reader who is on the wave at some point. And as a writer, I want the reader to be swimming as fast as he or she can to keep up with the wave, or I want the reader to be on top of the wave, and all of the wave is the plot. But the last thing I want is the reader to be in front of the wave, which would mean the reader knows something that Linley is going to find out. So what happened in doing this book is I actually had to redo it 5 times because of that complicated chronology. I would get to a certain point and I would realize, oh no, I'm giving away the story here. So then I would have to begin again. So I'm telling you, I had flow charts everywhere. I was trying to decide. I would have things with dates deciding, okay, this happens on this day and this happens on this day. And it was tough with the chronology.
Tell us about, I obviously want to get into the main characters in a moment, but tell us about Detective Sergeant Teo Buntempi, who is tied into this underworld, and ultimately what happens?
Well, Teo Buntempi, yes, is very passionate about the investigation. She is actually a Nigerian, and her name, Teo Buntempi, is the name she was given upon her adoption. She and her sister, Rosie Buntempi, were adopted when Teo was 7 and when Rosie was an infant. They were adopted by an Italian man and his French wife, and they live in London, and that's where they grew up. Rosie has grown up almost like a white English girl. She's not somebody who really acknowledges the fact that she is that she has a heritage that's African. Teo, on the other hand, acknowledges the fact that she is from Nigeria, that she is African, that she has another name. But the difficulty for Teo is that the secrets that she's keeping rob her of the life that she could have led had she not kept those secrets from the get-go. So she was a very interesting character for me to write, in that she's married, you know, she has this African heritage, but she's married to a white guy. He is somebody who's known her entire life. And he actually knows her secrets and is attempting to talk her into doing something about her secrets. She is very resistant to that until she stops resisting.
One of the things that makes the book so personal for the characters then is they're investigating the death of one of their own. Talk about what that meant in your writing of bringing that personal nature to Winley, to Barbara Havers, to Winston and Cotta.
Well, in the when the police are investigating the death of another policeman or policewoman, what that is going to do is immediately up the stakes on the investigation, because one of the things that the police are always concerned with is how they are represented in the media. And no one is more concerned with this problem than the assistant commissioner of police, who has sort of had this running relationship with both Linley and Havers over the years, because Linley especially disagrees with the idea of bringing in the media, but the assistant commissioner, David Hillier, knows that very often you have to do that. So that's one of the issues that they are dealing with when they take on this investigation. Additionally, they are also dealing with the team that Teo Bontempi worked on, which is a team outside of New Scotland Yard's part of the Metropolitan Police, and it's in a location in West London, where they have this huge building called Empress State Building. And so that's where they have been, that's where she worked, and that's where the investigation first begins with her boss, Mark Finney, and then later on with the assistance of her replacement as well.
Elizabeth George is our guest. The name of the new novel is Something to Hide. It is published by Viking. I mentioned the main characters, and again, I want to talk about them in a moment. It was great to see Deborah St. James back.
When I set out to do a book, what I always want to do, what I begin with is, okay, whose story can move forward in this book based on what I'm going to be writing about, based on who that person is, based on what the theme is. And so I saw that, having talked to the police who are actually working on this problem in London, one of the things I learned was that they are really trying to stop it through education. And they are engaging the schools to have programs that deal with this. And so what I realized is that Deborah St. James could be part of the part of what the Department for Education in England thinks of as the solution to the problem. And so she is asked to compile a series of photographs that can be used in brochures and in booklets, and the photographs would be of young girls who either have escaped female genital mutilation, who are threatened or who are threatened by having it, or who have had it. So she is she's offered this job, and she decides to take it because she sees in it the possibility of not only doing what they're asking her to do, which is to take pictures for this brochure and for the booklet, but she also sees that she can out of this get another big photography book, which she has already had published. She's already had one big photography book published, like a, what we call a coffee table book.
Right.
So she's had that published. It's done fairly well. And she sees, oh, this is another opportunity for me to do this, this kind of work that I'm benefiting not only the young girls who face this problem, but I'm also benefiting myself and my career. So she decides to take this job, and in taking the job, she puts herself in a position where she is forced to look at her own white privilege, and she is forced to look at the decisions that she made that actually have caused people of another race not only concern but often pain.
let us talk about the main characters. Thomas Linley is the 8th Earl of Asherton. Currently in this novel, the acting detective chief superintendent at London's New Scotland Yard, and is partnered with Detective Sergeant Barbara Havers. We also look at Havers' colleague, Detective Sergeant Winston Ancotta. At what point in writing this series did you feel that you had that trio down, that you had the balance right?
Oh, I'm not really sure that I've ever, you know, I've never really looked at it that way. When I set up a book, I always look at which of these characters could be involved, and they all have separate stories to tell. I think that the first time I saw where Winston and Ancotta fit in, it was probably in a book called A Traitor to Memory, where one of the people that is involved in this investigation is the lover of one of their suspects. And the lover has somebody who served prison time with the woman that they're interested in. And she served prison time for killing her husband, stabbing him to death. And because she is a Black woman and she has this young son, Winston feels this pull toward them and this desire to become more involved in their lives. And I think that was when I began to see the importance of Winston Ancotta. Originally, he was created to make an arrest in my second book, Payment in Blood. And the reason is that Barbara Havers is the one who I think makes the arrest, I can't remember if it's it was a long time ago, if it's the arrest or the questioning, but she takes Ancotta with her. And it's because the person that they're going to be bringing in for questioning is an earl. And she just really sort of wants to make the earl as uncomfortable as possible. And she figures that if she takes this really tall, big Black detective with her, that will serve the purpose of, you know, shivering the guy's timbers, as it were.
You have Linley, who is so gentlemanly, and Havers, who is just the opposite, and then Ancotta, who comes in and kind of balances everything out. Just the wonderful chemistry that these characters have on the page.
Oh, well, that's purely luck. Or, I mean, I knew that Havers and Linley would be really good. And I think the reality is that Barbara Havers will be good with any character that she's assigned to work with, in that she has so much edge. She has edge and she's not embarrassed of showing edge. And she gives me the freedom to write all kinds of really amusing scenes that add to the levity of the book. I mean, this is a pretty dark book with a dark subject matter. And if Havers wasn't in the book doing her typical Havers things, then I think it would be a much tougher read. One of my favorite scenes in the book is where Havers and Linley are going to interview one of the two women that they've come across who could indeed be involved in this situation of murder and culpability. They're on their way to interview this person, but they haven't had any lunch. And so Barbara is rooting through her purse, bringing out one piece of junk food after another and breaking it in half and sharing it with Linley. And it was just really a lot of fun writing that kind of thing because you know, Linley's not the kind of person who's going to be eating Twix bars for lunch or custard creams for his snack. And I think ultimately he finally refuses and talks about, you know, his dentistry. He's probably going to go to hell based on what they've been eating. And I just have a lot of fun with that. And part of it is that, you know, Barbara doesn't respect, she doesn't respect the aristocratic side of Linley. I mean, it's not that she doesn't, well, that's probably not the right thing. It's not that she doesn't respect it. It's that she doesn't care about it.
I think in a previous conversation that I had with you, you were talking about the trips that you take to the UK, really, that are research trips. And one of the things that stuck with me is that you'll investigate, but a lot of it is through photography and interviews and getting that right, because you don't always have the opportunity, especially during a pandemic, to run back and forth. You go, you figure it out, and then you work from the material that you've gathered.
Yes, and sometimes I make a second trip over just to fine-tune my notes, especially because sometimes, you know, in memory, your memory plays tricks on you. A good example of that is a book that I wrote called A Banquet of Consequences that takes place in Ludlow in England. And I had been to Ludlow, and I had spent a number of days there. So I felt I had a pretty good grip on it, taking lots of notes, taking lots of pictures, et cetera, et cetera. And so I got to a certain point in the story where Barbara Havers has left the police station, and she is going to walk to the location of where some of the young people live who are involved in the book. And so I had her cutting through this one schoolyard and then doing something else. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, so that's how it was. And then I got on Google Earth just for the heck of it, because I've never used Google Earth before. And I realized, oh my gosh, I can just see what Ludlow looks like from Google Earth. Well, it was a good thing that I did that, because I discovered that Barbara Havers could not have done what I had her doing. She would have had to jump down a pretty high bluff in order to do this. So I went back to Ludlow and got another route for her to take her to the place that she was going. Sometimes that's what it takes, is it takes a second visit. Sometimes it takes Google Earth to be able to verify what I've already seen and what I think is there. All the time it begins with my going to the location myself, because I've never written about a place that I haven't been, that I haven't seen, that I haven't photographed. This particular book was no different. So I had a, for example, for my next book, I don't know if you recall, but there was this brief hiatus between COVID-19
right.
and the severity of the Delta virus
right.
and Omicron. And in that brief period of time, I actually went over to England, and I was there for 17 days doing research for the next Lindley novel.
Again, Elizabeth George's new novel is Something to Hide. It is published by Viking. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.